ओम गणितम दस्य दिनां जना सुलकाय Well, it's Casey's turn. After being instructed by Kamsa, the demon Casey assumed the form of a terrible horse. He entered the arena of Vrindavan with the speed of the mind, his great mane flying and his hooves digging up the earth. He began to whinny. You know how to make the sound of a horse? What? What kind of horses have you been talking to? You know how to make the sound of horse? You were making them before. Let me hear. Sounds like a boy laughing to me. So he began to whinny. Does anyone know how to make horse sounds particularly? No one wants to admit it if they do. He began to whinny and terrify the whole forest. Krishna saw that the demon was terrifying all the residents of Vrindavan with his whinnying and his tail wheeling in the sky like a big cloud. And Krishna could understand that the horse was challenging him to fight. The Lord accepted his challenge and he stood before the Kesi demon, calling him to fight. He shook his mane, he disturbed the clouds and the airplanes of the demigods. His loud neighing instilled fear in all people. Seeing the Lord standing before him, the Lord came forward to meet him. Krishna, Kesi was searching for Krishna to fight. So when the Lord stood before him and challenged him to approach, the horse responded by roaring like a lion. And seeing the Lord standing before him, Kesi ran towards him in extreme rage, his mouth gaping as if to swallow up the sky. Rushing with furious speed, the unconquerable and unapproachable horse demon tried to strike the lotus-eyed Lord with his two front legs. You know, in I can't remember which city, but where's the city where Chaitak? Famous. Udaipur, maybe, or somewhere?
Yeah, same idea.
Yeah. So anyway, there's one big statue there of Chaitak with his legs up.
Chitto.
That's what I was trying to say. You thought I meant that, what is that called, TVS? They call that the little moped. Chaitak. You don't know that?
No, that place was called Chitto.
Oh, Chitto. I see. I'm sorry. So anyway, there's a huge statue of him attacking an elephant in the battle, and his legs are rearing up. So that's the main fighting capacity of a horse, to strike someone with something with his hooves.
So he tried to strike the lotus-eyed Lord with his two front legs. So his legs were like iron,
and Krishna is described as the lotus-like Lord, his lotus-eyed Lord,
because he's so beautiful and so wonderful and very soft. So he charged at Krishna. The transcendental Lord dodged Kesi's blow, and then with his arms, he angrily seized the demon by the legs, the same legs that he tried to attack Krishna with. Krishna grabbed those legs, and he whirled them around in the air, and contemptuously, with disregard for his strength, he threw him the distance of 100 bow lengths. That's 600 feet. 600 feet, that's quite far. It's 2 football fields, approximately. Just as Garuda might throw a snake, Lord Krishna then just stood there. Krishna Chakravarti Thakur says, when Kesi kicked his hind legs, Krishna dodged him. Oh, he did it from them. He kicked his hind legs, actually, his back legs, just like Tanukasura. Krishna dodged him, grabbed Kesi's extended legs with his hands, twirled him around, and threw him 600 feet away. Astonishingly, Krishna did all this while standing in one place. And upon regaining consciousness, Kesi angrily got up. He opened up his mouth wide, because horses have teeth, and again rushed to attack Lord Krishna. But the Lord just smiled, and he thrust his left arm into the horse's mouth as easily as one would make a snake enter a hole in the ground. Coming from Srivastava Chakravarti Thakur. Kesi stood up after regaining consciousness. He opened his mouth wide and charged again. Krishna just laughed because his mouth was open, and he put his left thumb up and he said, oh, you want to eat something? Because your mouth is open. So you want to eat something? Here, eat this. Then Krishna thrust his left arm into the Kesi's open mouth to kill him, just as a snake easily enters a hole to kill a mouse. Immediately, Kesi's teeth fell out when they touched the Supreme Lord's arm, which to the demon felt as hot as molten iron. Within Kesi's body, the Supreme Personality's arm then expanded greatly, began to swell, like a diseased stomach swelling because of neglect. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, alas, alas, how could Krishna place his arm, which is as tender as the stem of a blue lotus, into the mouth of Kesi, which was filled with fierce teeth? Anticipating such an objection by disturbed Maharaj Bricket, Sukadeva Goswami answered in this verse, as Kesi's teeth touched Krishna's arm to chew on it, they became uprooted and fell out, just as if contacting a red-hot iron. Although Krishna's arm is softer and more cooling than a blue lotus, to Kesi it felt as hard and hot as a thunderbolt, just as a jaundiced person perceives sugar candy as bitter. Krishna's arm expanded within Kesi's mouth until he died, just as Krishna expanded his body within the mouth of Agasura. As Lord Krishna's expanding arm completely blocked Kesi's breathing, his legs kicked convulsively, his body became covered with sweat, his eyes rolled around. The demon then passed stool and fell on the ground, dead. The mighty arm, Krishna, withdrew his arm from Kesi's body, which now appeared like a long Karkatika fruit. Anyone know what a Karkatika fruit is? It is also known as papaya. So Krishna's arm, Kesi's body was like a papaya that had burst.
without the least displaying of pride at having so effortlessly killed his enemy, the Lord accepted the demigod's worship in the form of flowers rained down from above. Krishna says, Kesi's body burst open like an overripe melon. In spite of killing the big demon, Krishna was not proud, since he did it very easily. The demigod sprinkled flowers and fine drops of water to dispel Krishna's tiredness. Then, so this chapter has three parts. Now we will enter the second part. And then the third part will describe the last demon that Krishna will kill in Vrindavan. And that demon was known as Vyomasura. But this part, so soon as Krishna kills Keshi, and it's interesting to note, this happened quite soon after Aristasura was killed. And Aristasura was killed at twilight, at dusk, and Krishna was just getting ready for the rasa dance, and then he ended up killing Aristasura, and then having playful talks with the gopis, Srimati Radharani, and then he constructed Radhakund and Shyamakund. They constructed Radhakund and Shyamakund. So that was around 12 o'clock at night, because that is the appearance day, that is known as the appearance time of Radhakund, is at 12 midnight. So all night long, this was going on, the playful activities with Krishna and the gopis were going on. But then, and then the next day, when Kesi attacked, it doesn't describe the time when he attacked, but he was searching for Krishna. He was neighing loudly. He wanted to fight. They thought they would easily kill Krishna, both Aristasura and Kesi. And then, after Krishna killed Kesi, which was the next day, then Narada Muni approached, because the day before, Narada Muni, just when he sent Kesi and Aristasura to Vrindavan, he also Narada Muni had talked to Kamsa, and Kamsa had made his plans to send a Kura and to bring Krishna to Mathura to try to kill Krishna by Chinura Mastika and Kuvalaya Pita. The reason why Kamsa just didn't come himself was, there were two reasons that I've read. One was that if he came with his armies, then he feared that Vasudev but Nandamaraj would hide Krishna and Balaram. And the other reason he didn't come himself is because he sent Putana, who was powerful. He sent Trinavarta, who was powerful. He sent so many demons who were powerful, and finally Arista and Kesi, who were powerful. And they were all killed by Krishna. So he himself didn't come because he was full of fear. So Narada Muni, the next day after the killing of Kesi, he met Krishna in a lonely, quiet place because he had something to tell him. Krishna was also thinking that I have killed so many demons, and finally there's the demon Kuvalaya Pita to kill, and then there'll be Chanura Mastika to kill, and then finally Kamsa is going to be killed, and I'm going to have to leave Braja to do this, to finish my other duties. And Krishna started thinking, but how is it possible that I can leave Braja? My whole life is here, and everyone is so attached to me. And if I leave, Nanda Maharaj won't even be able to drink water. And even the soda will be completely disturbed.
How will they stay alive? They will suffer so greatly. The cowherd boys, or to speak of the brother gopis, there will be unlimited an ocean of suffering. How can I leave brother I am so attached to also? And then he thought, what rules this brother is prema. So let prema make its own arrangement, and I won't think about it anymore. But he decided that he couldn't just leave to kill the demons, but there would have to be some excuse that would call him out of Vrindavan. And Kamsa had already set into motion that excuse that he had to leave. And that excuse was there was going to be a great wrestling. There's a Dhanajagya, and there's going to be great festivities and wrestling taking place, a great festival, and Krishna was asked by the king to participate in the festival. And Nanda Maharaj was going to come at the same time and pay taxes, pay his tribute to the king. So, to tell Krishna that it was time to now wind up his Vrindavan pastimes and leave to Mathura, Narada Muni had that as his task and mission. So after speaking to Kamsa, he now decided to speak to Krishna. So Narada Muni saw Krishna here for the first time in Vrindavan, and he saw him as the sum total of all the incarnations of the Lord, because he was used to seeing so many incarnations of the Lord, and he saw Krishna as the most excellent carrying the most excellent aspects of all the different incarnations. So he said, Oh Krishna, unlimited Lord, source of all mystic power, Lord of the universe, Oh Vasudev, the shelter of all beings and the best of the Yadus, O Master, you are the supreme soul of all created beings, and you are sitting within the cave of the heart like the fire dormant within kindling wood. What does that mean? You are sitting unseen within the cave of the heart like the fire dormant within the kindling wood. Not specifically, yes, he's the essence of anything. What specifically? He says it quite clearly.
And you don't see fire in the wood externally, only see the wood. But externally, you don't see Krishna within.
The heart. Yeah. But there is fire dormant. Dormant means basically sleeping, covered within the fire. I think if you put your head on your father's knee, you'll find a great surprise. You know your father's knee? If you touch with the head, it feels like papaya. Did you know that? And also it tastes like ice cream. No? So Narada Muni's vision was completely different than the vision of the Brijvasis. Now, whose vision is more accurate? Narada Muni sees things that the Brijvasis don't see. And are they true, what he sees? That's certainly true. But yet the Brijvasi's vision is considered much higher and much better. So truth or tattva is not considered the highest point of vision. Rather it is the sweetness of the rasa that is considered the highest. So Krishna, 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 aprayat tamam. Unlimited Lord, source of all mystic power, Lord of the universe. This isn't the way the Vrijbasi see Krishna. O Vasudev, shelter of all beings, best of the Yadus, O Master, you are the supreme soul of all created beings, sitting unseen within the cave of the heart, like the fire dormant within kindling wood. You are the witness within everyone, the supreme personality, and the ultimate controlling deity. You are the Mahapurusha. Krishna, Krishna, Prameyatmam, Yogesha Jagadishwara, Vasudeva, Akila Vasa, Satvatam, Pravara Prabho, Tvamatma Sarvabhutanam, Eko Jyotir, Ivayadasam, Gudo Guha, Saya Shakshi, Mahapurusha Ishwara. And then he continues to praise him. You are the shelter of all souls. Atmanan, Atmana, Atmanashraya Purvam, Mayaya, Sasrajegunam, Taridam, Satyasankalpa, Sri Jas, Yatyas, Avaishvara. You are the shelter of all souls, and being the supreme controller, you fulfill your desires simply by your will, your Satyasankalpa, whose desires are fulfilled just by his will. By your personal creative potency, you manifested in the beginning the primal modes of material nature, and through their agency, you create, maintain, and then destroy this universe. You, that very same creator, have now descended on the earth to annihilate the Daitya, Pramatta, and Rakshasa demons who are posing as kings. And also you have come to protect the godly. So this is so different than the way that the Vrijbasis relate to Krishna, yet it is true. The horse demon was so terrifying that his neighing frightened the demigods into leaving the heavenly kingdom. But by our good fortune, you have enjoyed the sport of killing him. In just 2 days, O Almighty Lord, he starts telling him of his future pastimes, because what he's doing is telling him that he's going to have to leave, wind up his Vrindavan pastimes and leave and perform his duties of killing the rest of the demons that he had descended to kill. So he's telling him subtly, by telling him what he's going to do in 2 days, he's telling him that you're going to leave Vrindavan immediately. In just 2 days, O Almighty Lord, I will see the deaths of Chanura, Mastika, and other wrestlers, along with those of the elephant Kuvalarpita and King Kamsa, all by your hand. Then I will see you kill Kalyavana, Mura, Naraka, and the Kanj demon. And Srila Jiva Goswami describes how the killing of all these demons that Narada is describing is simply reminding Krishna of Braja. And he's thinking, how am I going to be able to leave Braja? With each thing, he's thinking, how am I going to leave Braja? What's going to happen with this? This is not possible. How can this happen? What will I do next? Tell me something else. And then whatever he says, whatever Narada says, still reminds Krishna of Braja. Then I will see you kill Kalyavana, Mura, Naraka, the Kanj demon, and I will also see you steal the Parijata flower and defeat Indra. I then will see you marry many daughters of heroic kings after paying for them with your valor. When Krishna killed Nagnajiti, he married Nagnajiti, who is also named Satya, he had to bind up tie up and control these eight bulls. That reminded him of Braja. Everything reminded the conch shell that is mentioned, that is called his conch shell reminds him of Vrindavan. O Lord of the universe in Dwarka, you will deliver King Riga from a curse and take for yourself the Sharmataka jewel together with another wife. You will bring back a Brahmana's dead son from the abode of your servant Yamaraj, and thereafter you will kill Pondraka. You will burn down the city of Kashi. You will annihilate Dantavakra and the king of Chedi during the great Rajasuya sacrifice. Who is the king of Chedi? Sishupal. I shall see all these heroic pastimes, along with many others, that you will perform during your residence in Dwaraka. These pastimes are glorified on this earth in the songs of transcendental poets. And subsequently, after that, I will see you appear as time personified, serving as Arjuna's chariot driver and destroying entire armies of soldiers to rid the earth of her burden. And let us approach you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for shelter. You are full of perfectly pure spiritual awareness and are always situated in your original identity. Since your will is never thwarted, it cannot be stopped, what you desire, you have already achieved all possible desirable things. And by the power of your spiritual energy, you remain eternally aloof from the flow of the qualities of illusion. I bow down to you, the Supreme Controller, who are dependent only on yourself. By your potency, you have constructed the unlimited particular arrangement of this universe. Now you have appeared as the greatest hero amongst the Yadu, Vrishni, and Satvatas, and have chosen to participate in human welfare. Excuse me, in human warfare. Sukadeva Goswami said, having thus addressed Lord Krishna, the chief of the Yadu dynasty, Narada bowed down and offered him obeisances. Then that great sage and most eminent devotee took his leave from the Lord and went away, feeling great joy because he had directly seen the Lord. Now let's see what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur commented on all these different points. Krishna, Krishna, unlimited Lord, source of all mystic power. Krishna says, Narada called out Krishna's name twice, Krishna, Krishna, out of his great bliss, while thinking himself as just a semblance, like a shadow of a devotee who praises the Lord by the sankirtan of his names. Narada Muni said, no one can measure or understand your mind. Therefore, who can ascertain what is on your mind? Whether you intend to remain in Braja, giving joy to your parents and the other Brijbasis, or whether you will go to Mathura. As the controller of Yogamaya, you can easily stay in both places without difficulty. But as the master of the universe, you must kill the demons who burn the earth. You are famous as the son of Nanda, but now you should become known as the son of Vasudeva, thus generating his good fortune. Therefore, come live in Mathura and relieve all your devotees there from the fear of Kamsa. You are the best fulfiller of desires and the best amongst the Yadus. Thus, O Master Prabhu, you can do anything. Krishna replies, I act according to my desires, so why are you making a request from me? Narada answered, you are the super soul within me, who gave me the inspiration to request you. So what can I do? You dwell not only in my heart, but within the hearts of all living beings. You remain hidden, just like fire within wood, just as you rest in the caves of Govardhan as Nanda's son. You rest within the heart as the super soul. Though you are resting in the heart, you are the witness of everything. Thus you are the greatest person with the power to do anything. Generally, even great persons have someone above them with more power,
for you alone are the supreme controller, the Ishwara of everyone. So this is Krishna's position, and yet look what he has been doing for the last, we could say years, or we could say for the last so many chapters. This is chapter 37. So ever since Krishna came to Vrindavan and he crossed Yamuna from Mathura in the first chapter or the second chapter. So for the last so many chapters, Krishna has been in Vrindavan, Gokul Vrindavan, and then he's been playing in such a playful way, killing demons, hurting the calves, playing with his friends, being naughty, stealing butter. He's been doing so many things, but look at his position. What impels the Supreme Lord to act like this? And the answer is that prema, the prema of the devotees of Vraja, it rules Vrindavan. And prema pramartho mahan. This is the great necessity of our existence. So this is Krishna. He's in everyone's heart. Just like he played in the caves of Govardhan, he is in the heart of everyone. You are the witness of everything. You are the supreme Ishwara. Everyone, regardless of how powerful they are, has someone above them. But there is no one above Krishna. And yet, he was wandering around Vrindavan. And yet, Narada recognized him. And yet, the residents of Vrindavan, they sometimes know that Krishna is the all-powerful Lord. Sometimes they don't know he's the all-powerful Lord. But their particular intensity of love for him, it overpowers whatever feelings they have of his unlimited opulence. But Narada Muni is feeling such happiness that he's just seen Krishna. And that is wonderful. He's come to Vrindavan, he's seen Krishna, the Supreme Lord, he's praised him, he knows of Krishna's powers. And the residents of Vrindavan, they love him so much, they see him every day, and they cannot tolerate not seeing him. But yet, Narada is informing that their time to not see Krishna is fast approaching. You are the shelter of all souls, he says. And being the supreme controller, you fulfill your desires simply by your will. By your personal creative potency, you manifested in the beginning the primal modes of material nature, pradhan, and through their agency you create, maintain, and then destroy this universe. Vishnu comments. If you had not created myself, my intelligence, and the rest of the universe, then I would not be able to make any requests for you. With this intention, Narada speaks. You are independent. You are the shelter of all souls. By your energies, which are none different from you, you create the elements starting from Mahatattva. As you create this world, you also inspire everyone to fulfill their desires. In this way, although I am another separate person, I'm trying to request you. You are that same creator, Narada says. You have now descended on the earth to annihilate the Daitya, Pramatta, and Rakshasa demons who are posing as kings, and also to protect the godly. Narada continued, Vishnu says, therefore I have come today to make a request. You are the creator mentioned in the previous verse, and you have appeared to protect the devotees and to destroy the demons posing as kings. The horse demon, this is verse 14, was so terrifying that his neighing frightened the demigods into leaving the heavenly kingdom. But by our good fortune, you have enjoyed the sport of killing him. Krishna says, Narada said, you have destroyed this demon for the benefit of the people. And then he starts describing what he's going to do in the future. The killing of Chanura Mastika comes to the Rajasuya sacrifice. Sisupal, Dantavakra, Pondraka, you're going to return the dead sons of the Brahmana. You're going to liberate King Riga from his position as a lizard. You marry so many wives, and to this Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments.
Narada said, I know the sequence of your pastimes, having already seen them in your various previous descents. This is only an outline of your future pastimes, and it is not intended to be a comprehensive account. I will see you kill the Panchajanya, the Sankh demon. I will watch you retrieve the Srimataka jewel along with your wife, Jambavati, and you will deliver a Brahmin son from the abode of Yamaraj. I will see you appear as time personified, serving as Arjuna's chariot driver. You will destroy the entire armies of soldiers to rid the earth of her burden. Let us approach you, the Supreme Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for shelter. You are full of perfectly pure spiritual awareness and are always situated in your original identity. Since your will is never thwarted, you have already achieved all possible desirable things, and by the power of your spiritual energy, you remain eternally aloof from the flow of the qualities of illusion. Interesting purport comment by Vishnu. He says, after describing the future pastimes of Krishna, Narada offers his respects in two verses. I offer my respects to you, O Lord, who are the concentrated Brahman, or spiritual essence, and the ultimate object of pure realization. All the desires of the devotees reside completely in you, who exist eternally along with your associates, and you mercifully fulfill all those desires. Right now, we all have desires, well, especially not we all, but all the conditioned souls have desires, and they have unlimited desires, but they are not within Krishna, they are external to Krishna. But all those desires are meant to be brought to Krishna, and they have their perfection in Krishna and in Krishna's service. So when we do that, because due to false ego, all the living entities have their desires outside of Krishna and centered around themselves. But when those desires are turned around and all focused on Krishna and changed into Krishna's pleasure instead of our own pleasure, then they are perfect and we are pure devotees. So Vishnu said, all the desires of the devotees reside completely in you, who exist eternally along with your associates, and you mercifully fulfill all the desires of the pure devotees. Through your potency, or else by the potency of your pure devotees, you help them every day to avoid the influence of the modes of material nature. What do you think of that?
Sounds like a good idea.
That he helps the devotees every day.
Avoid materialism too much.
Yeah. By your potency. And he concludes.
So, but it's interesting though, because he helps us, and we sometimes are very expert at avoiding his help. But his desire is to pull us to him. But our desire sometimes is external to him.
He concludes by saying, Narada concludes, I bow down to you, the Supreme Controller, who are dependent only on yourself. By your potency, so...
In this world, most people like to think of themselves as dependent upon themselves. We like to think of ourselves as independent. But the devotional mood is just the opposite. To be dependent fully on Krishna as we attempt to serve him. Because that's what false ego tries to do, and this is the great the explanation why everyone is so interested in money. Because money, people consider, is that which makes them independent and powerful. So they don't have to depend on anyone else. But to get that money, you have to be completely dependent on someone else. You have to work hard. But if someone's already self-satisfied, then they don't need anything external, and Krishna is actually the supreme self-satisfied.
I bow down to you, the supreme controller, who are dependent only on yourself. By your potency, you have constructed the unlimited particular arrangement of this universe. That's powerful. Now you have appeared as the greatest hero amongst the Yadus, the Vrishnis, the Satvatas, and have chosen to participate in human warfare. This is the final comment of the Srimad Bhagavati Thakur on this. Narada said, there is no one like you. You have the power to control all others. You are self-contained, not under the shelter of anyone. All others must take shelter of you. Swa asrayan asrayam means that Krishna does not depend on anyone else. Therefore, he is not under anyone else's control. Narada continued, Krishna, you create this variegated universe by Maya, who is subordinate to you. Your only object is to play. Now, you will fight with humans like Kamsa after killing Kesi, who is Kamsa's very life. I offer respects to you. Sukadeva Goswami said, having thus addressed Lord Krishna, the chief of the Yadu dynasty, Narada bowed down and offered him obeisances. Then that great sage and most eminent devotee took his leave from the Lord and went away, feeling great joy at having directly seen him. Thus, after killing Kesi in battle, the Supreme Personality of Godhead continued to tend the cows. So he went right back to tending the cows. He knew what was about to happen too, and he was very disturbed by it, but he decided to let the Leela Shakti and Prema make all the arrangements as they were meant to occur. So he just, after hearing all that about himself, that he's the supreme controller and everything is going on by his potency and he's in everyone's heart, he just continued to tend the cows and other animals in the company of his joyful cowherd boyfriends. Thus he brought happiness to all the residents of Vrindavan.
And soon he was going to bring the greatest unhappiness to all the residents of Vrindavan, because they, again, he was everything for them.
So one day, the cowherd boys, while grazing their animals on the mountain slopes, played the game of stealing and hiding, acting out the roles of rival thieves and herders. In that game, O king, some acted as thieves, others as shepherds, and others as sheep. So there were three roles in this game: the sheep, the shepherds, and the thieves. They played their game happily without fear of danger. But a powerful magician, Mayaputra, the son of the demon Maya, named Vyoma, then appeared on the scene in disguise, the disguise of a cowherd boy. Pretending to join the game as a thief, he was invisible. So they were playing, and he walked in there, and he started taking the sheep away. And because they were playing, and some of the cowherd boys were in the game trying to steal them, no one noticed that they were disappearing, stolen by Vyomasura. He pretended to join the game as a thief, and he proceeded to steal most of the cowherd boys who were acting as sheep. Gradually, the great demon abducted more and more of the cowherd boys and cast them into a mountain cave, which he sealed shut with a boulder. Finally, only four or five boys acting as sheep remained in the game.
Lord Krishna, who is the shelter of all saintly devotees, understood perfectly well what Vyomasura was doing. And just as a lion grabs a wolf, Krishna forcefully seized the demon as he was taking away more cowherd boys. The demon changed into his original form, as big and as powerful as a great mountain. But try as he might to free himself, he could not do so, having lost his strength from being held tightly in the Lord's grip. Lord Achyuta clutched Vyomasura between his arms and threw him to the ground. Then, while the demigods in heaven looked on, Krishna killed him in the same way that one kills a sacrificial animal. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains, Krishna killed Vyomasura in the same manner in which a sacrificial animal is slaughtered, namely by suffocation through strangulation, just as Vyomasura had tried to kill the coward boys by suffocation when he locked them in the cave. Krishna then smashed the boulder blocking the cave's entrance, and he led the trapped coward boys to safety. Thereafter, as the demigods and coward boys sang his glories, he returned to his coward village of Gokul. So tomorrow we'll begin to hear about Akura's arrival in Vrindavan. Okay, any questions or comments?
Yeah. When Krishna went to Mathura, why didn't he also stay in Vrindavan?
Because he did say you could do anything, you can be involved. Well, of course, there's many explanations of this, of why Krishna left Vrindavan. So the main explanation is he never left Vrindavan, and this will be described later. He stays in his bhava manifestation, in uprakat lila, in unmanifest manifestation, and the channel to that lila was that association with Krishna is deep separation from Krishna, deep love for Krishna. Also, it is said that only the gopis and Nanda and Yasoda experience Krishna as not being there. Everyone else was.
So
there's many reasons. And then also it describes when Nanda came back from Mathura, he brought Krishna and Balaram back. Also, an expansion, but these two levels of existence stayed separate.
So when Krishna leaves Vrindavan, his lila is still going on in Vrindavan.
Yeah. But
it's not manifested, so it's Africa.
Yeah.
So if someone goes there, they can't see Krishna there, but it's going on.
Unless they have the qualification of love and separation, then they can penetrate. Yeah, when Uddhava comes, there's some verses when he sees Vrindavan and its uppercut manifestation, then that's withdrawn, and then he sees in the throes of separation.
So it's going on simultaneously, the prakat and uppercut.
Always.
So there's one version.
There's many
of the
levels
of
existence.
There's one version of the gopis which is lamenting in separation from Krishna. There's another version of the woman Rasa Lila.
But of course, it's impossible for us conditioned souls to perceive what the residents of Vrindavan are perceiving. But they're going about their life going back and forth between these two levels continuously. Even while the gopis are singing in the Jugal Gita, the singing of Krishna, they're going back and forth between being with Krishna and not being with Krishna. They're going back and forth between separation and meeting continuously. Krishna's manifesting to them, going back and forth, and they're going through their life like a dream. They can't tell whether they're awake or sleeping. They're just completely in this realm. They can't tell whether time is passing slowly or not passing.
Because in the material sphere, if your life's become like that, you're in a mess. No, no, if you know whether you're going forward or backward or up or down, you know,
you should read the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
I mean, in your life,
that's our goal. Mess, right? That's our goal.
To get in a mess.
Well,
or we should be in another mess where you don't know whether your life's going
lost
forward or backwards or left or
right.
Lost in life.
Life is mess anyway.
And there's also so many reasons why Krishna says that he's going to do this. He's going to perform his lila in this way. You know, there's things that are said in Vrindavan with having to do with prema vavarta, separation, feeling separation and meeting, because the gopis, when they were with Krishna, they were feeling separation from Krishna. And when they were separated from Krishna, they were experiencing being with him. So Krishna thought, they'll be with me more intimately if I'm not here. That's another explanation. Another explanation is that when they're with me here in Vrindavan, they're always being chastised, or when we're in Vrindavan, they're always being chastised by their relatives for their attraction to me. So Krishna's thinking, from my point of view, I know who they are, and Narada knows who they are. They know that they're my eternal associates, the Nitya Siddha Gopis. But from the regular point of view of the Leela, they're always being chastised. You're attracted to Krishna. And because they're so chaste, they feel very bad about that. So in that feeling bad about that, their love for me is slackened a little bit. Even though it can't be slackened, they feel bad about it, that they're completely captivated by me, so they have to try to compress their love. So Krishna was thinking, but if I'm away, then they won't be with me, so then they won't be criticized, and therefore their love for me will increase still more. It won't be broken at all. So therefore, and then he thought, but what am I going to do? You know, they'll be, but how about me? I won't be in Vrindavan. He thought, oh, so this is all what Krishna is actually thinking in these ways. He's completely captivated by the love of all the residents of Vrindavan. And then it's described that when Krishna finally comes back after the killing of Dantavakra, because after the killing of Salva, which was in Dwarka, then Krishna gets the message that Dantavakra is attacking Mathura and trying to destroy, attacking Krishna in that way. So usually what Krishna would do is he would take permission, because Krishna never did anything without taking permission. So usually what he would do, because he was in Dwarka, he would go to inside and take permission from Ugrasena and Vasudeva. But he knew that they'll never give me permission to go to Mathura, because it's too close to Vrindavan. So instead of going to Mathura, he left for Vrindavan. Instead of going to get permission, he left directly for Mathura. He fought with Dantavakra and killed him. And then he killed Vidyaratha, the final demon that he kills in his lila, and then his Vidyarat. In that same chapter, it's 78, 79, Balaram goes on pilgrimage and killed Maharshi Sutta. But in 78, Krishna does that, and then he crosses the river, because he's in Mathura. there's a name, I can't remember the name of the place, it's written down there, where he crosses Yamuna with his chariot, with Dharuka drive the chariot, and then when he gets to Vrindavan side, he crosses at Vishramghat, the place where he rested after killing Kamsa. And then the residents, and then he puts on cowherd clothes again. But Dharuka's there, and the residents of Vrindavan see him, and every day they have been thinking, Krishna must be coming today, Krishna must be coming today. And then suddenly Krishna was there, and they went mad serving him. But the problem was they were stunned and couldn't move. So they were serving him, but not serving him. They were thinking, well, how can, Krishna must be so hungry, he must be so tired, let me get this, let me do that. But they couldn't move because they were so stunned seeing Krishna come back after so long. And then, so their services were performed very, very imperfectly to Krishna, but Krishna was, didn't see it like that.
But then even when he was gone, the upper kapula was still going on.
Don't be surprised that you can't fully understand it.
No,
yes, it's always going on. Huh?
If somebody asked me to explain it, I'll be...
Well, you'll have to say, you know, it's like when you have a four-year-old boy asks his father, where did I come from? He said, oh, this big bird came and brought you here. What is he going to explain? The stork brought you, that's what they say.
The object of how Narad Muni speaks in so many future things also, past things also. What exactly is meant?
He's trying to tell Krishna, it's time to leave, you have your duties to perform now. You've come down for a particular purpose, and that is to rid the earth of the demons. I will see you do this, I will see you do that, I will see you do that. Now you have to do it. Krishna, it was very hard to get Krishna to leave Vrindavan because he's trapped there by the love of the Vrijbasis. And so it is well known that Krishna goes where the love is greatest. So they've captured him. And then so Narada Muni has this service to do. You will do this. So he's a little indirect, he's telling him. Because he's just called him the Parameshwara and everything, so he can't be... He said, now it's time for you to leave. You have to do these other things. So he can't do that because he's the Supreme Controller. So rather he says, in 2 days from now I will see you kill Tanura and Mastika, and then I will see you kill Kamsa, and you will give so much pleasure to your relatives, the great devotees in Mathura, who are now suffering so much under Kamsa. So
as if you know he's trapped unknowingly, and he doesn't know that he has come for this purpose.
Oh, Krishna or no?
No, Krishna.
No, Krishna knows, but Sridhar Jiva Goswami says that the way he describes it is that Krishna had been thinking, I have to do these things. But how could I possibly leave? So I have to let things happen and develop in their own way, because I can't do it by my own power. I can't will this.
But then he doesn't really have the dilemma, because he can stay and go. He can stay and go.
Well, that's what he ultimately does do.
See, he has a dilemma that... It's not really a dilemma for him, because...
But it is a dilemma for him, because...
Naralila.
It's Naralila, yeah, exactly. And it's a dilemma for the when later on, if we're brave enough, we'll read what happens tomorrow. We'll hear how Akura comes, but then when Akura leaves, it's something else, because it's not that the brother gopis are thinking, oh, anyway, you can stay or go, and you're the Supreme Personality of God, and it doesn't make any difference. We're, you know, we'll just associate with you in a uppercut, Leela. No worries. They don't think like that, because they have, it's not the nature of love. So you can't, you have to look at it from both points of view, the tattva point of view and the rasa point of view. So from the rasa point of view, they don't think in that he can stay in both places. What's the problem? They can't think like that because there's no rasa in that at all for them. They're just seeing, they just love him. But they just love him. They can't tolerate a moment's separation from him. So he is with them, but there's variegatedness in how he's with them. You know, sometimes it's yoga v yoga.
No, he's never separate from any living entity.
Right.
But from a tattva point of view, it's only an illusion that he's separate.
It's our illusion, not our his. But he also gets into that illusion too, in the sense that in Vrindavan, he gets in the illusion that he's separate, and his heart is breaking too.
Yeah, well, it's different from my life.
By a long sight. Oh, yes, certainly, it's mysterious.
It's over my head.
Yes.
Also, it is described further that it was really hard for Krishna, even when he was Dwarka, was always being sort of, you know, struggling inside with the love of the gopis. Sometimes he is not with the queens and others, and always focused on the gopis. And he was very happy also in his mind.
So that is his ecstasy in that way, his missing them. Because that question is also asked by from a different point of view, not from the tattva point of view, but from the point of view of how could Krishna do this to the residents of Vrindavan? He stayed away for so long, and their hearts were breaking. And Balaram said, "I will bring him back by force when he came to visit Vrindavan. I will force him. Uddhava couldn't do it. But I will bring him by force." And still Krishna stayed away. So that's rasa point of view. But he was never away. That's tattva point of view. Mm-hmm. And actually that when Krishna heard from Uddhava, he asked him about what is the condition of the residents of Vrindavan, especially the gopis, especially Srimati Radharani, and then he tells them. And Krishna is so overwhelmed by that. Vishwanath Chakravarti, I think it's Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, explains that this is one of the seeds of his coming is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because he's so amazed at that love, he's so attracted to that love that he wants himself to, he himself wants to taste it.
So that love, the gopis are feeling separation, who is greater than the love he's feeling separation from the gopis?
Well, Krishna himself says, because they are ekanishta and I am bahunishta. I have so many devotees and they only have one focus. So their love is even more powerful than mine, but actually, He remains indebted to them for their love. So their love is actually more powerful. It controls him. And it even can be said, and it does say in Chaitanya Charitamrita, that they experience even more ecstasy than he experiences, and he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna's Kaviraj says that, he says, quoting Bharat Muni, that the lover and the beloved enjoy equally. But he said, those who say that the lover and beloved enjoy equally do not know my braja. So there's a different realm. There's a different realm that we are meant to be in. And that realm is, and that's Mahaprabhu's gift of Vrindavan. But it takes, to get there, one needs to have bhakti following in the footsteps of the resonance of Vrindavan. So that is what Mahaprabhu taught. That's what he gave, and that's what he taught by his example. So when you actually hear what it is, when you get some idea what it is, you say, I'm supposed to do that. I'm trying my best to make my messed up life orderly. And then you want me to go mad in ecstasy and love of God or something? Like, what's going to happen to, who pay my insurance? My car? That's like when that fellow said to Prabhupada, if everyone becomes a devotee, this, an industrial set said, then you know, who will run the factories? And Prabhupada said, let the factories go to hell. Who cares who runs them? You know, they're not necessary, actually, for the existence. Yeah, so from the point of view of an ordinary human being, the activities of an exalted lover of Krishna can look very peculiar, because they're on a different, their vision, their consciousness, their everything is completely different. Their perception of reality is completely different. Yeah.
Understood.
Yeah, he was living in a latrine for quite a few months, and people would bang on the door, tell him to go away. You know, it appeared like madmen. Mm.
That's because these people who come, they are not sincere. They just come and
want blessings. Yeah, they don't want to have to come and deal with this kind of insanity of the material illusory realm. They don't want to deal with it. Because, you know, they're chanting, they're actually up there, you know, they're up there with Krishna. And then someone wants to come for a blessing so that his kid gets good grades in the university or something like that. Give me a break, you know? Go ask somebody else. Why are you bothering me about it? So they act in ways that make people want to keep away from them. But yet Krishna also says that even if you're on whatever, Krishna himself says, yad yada charati sreshtas, you don't act in a good way, so everyone will follow an example. But some of these souls don't care. They're called avaduta there. They just don't want to be bothered. They've shaken off the material world and they have no duties to perform. They don't care about it. They're not in it. So, how will you get home now? How will you drive home? Yeah.
I'll be on the platform of Tupper rather than Russell.
Practical, isn't it? And why imitate anyway? Imitation always looks poor. The real thing is the real thing. That's one of the principles of Vaishnavism, no imitation.
They are always condemned by this
flesh. Okay.
except for their preferable Brahmai ladies.
Huh?
Except for their preferable Brahmai ladies. The only credit they give is the preferable Brahmai ladies.
Maharaja has its own place.
Same place where the demons go. It's like downtown in Perth. Okay.